Are you sitting comfortably? Then we'll begin.
Listen with other, because grown-ups need story time too. The Mind Children by Giles Booth. Episode 6. Now is the month of Maying. Headmistress Mrs. Earnshaw liked holding staff meetings in the school hall. Although progressive in her outlook on teaching and learning, music and movement and the like, she was not so liberal when it came to managing her staff. Putting them in the hall like children put them in their place and made it clear who was boss. "Now then, plans for May Day, how are they progressing, Miss Wright?" Miss Wright looked up at the mural above their heads, painted 20 years ago or more, of villagers dancing round the maypole. Something seemed to be different about it. She could swear there were more children in the picture than normal. Last year, her class had done a history project on it. They tried to trace everyone pictured and interviewed the artist, a painter of railway posters, who still lived in the village. She'd have to dig out the display they made. She coughed nervously. "Let me guess," said Mrs. Earnshaw. "Not enough boys wanting to take part as usual? They think dancing is for sissies?" "No, actually, Mrs. Earnshaw, quite the reverse." "What do you mean?" "Too many." "Too many boys?" "Too many children, full stop. Almost every child has volunteered. I've even had parents at the gate telling me how upset their children will be if they're not chosen." "How strange." "Something on telly, no doubt," chipped in Mr. Troughton. "Blue Peter has a lot to answer for, filling their heads with nonsense." "Actually, we did a survey last term," said Miss Wright, secretly enjoying putting Dave Troughton in his place. 53% of the school watch Magpie. Only 27% watch Blue Peter." "That doesn't add up," cried Mr. Troughton triumphantly. "The other 20% either didn't have a television or they weren't allowed to watch it during the week." Miss Wright folded her arms triumphantly. "Fascinating, I'm sure," said Mrs. Earnshaw. "We're training a whole new generation of market researchers. Excellent, excellent. Now, May Day. May Day is key. It's the highlight of the village year. What are we to do?" "We could expand the dance," suggested Miss Wright. "Or do more than one," said Miss Pine, the deputy head, who'd been silent up until that point. "That'll go on too long," said Mrs. Earnshaw. "We'll just have to draw names out of a hat. Make sure that Stevie Jones boy doesn't get picked, mind. He's one of the few not to ask." "Good." The Mind Children had somehow found their way into the deserted school kitchen. They were listening and watching through the grill that covered the serving hatch when it wasn't in use. They began to nod in unison, their eyes flashing green and blue. "Or," said Miss Wright, "we could ask the adults to step aside and we just have children this year, so fewer of them will be disappointed. Perhaps add some more ribbons as well." Mrs. Earnshaw felt a little dizzy. She wondered if she needed her medication. She snapped her notebook closed. "Very well, I'll speak to the parish council. Perhaps a focus on children will improve the tone of the whole day. And they might drop that ducking stool nonsense. One year someone's going to get hurt." "Good idea, Miss Wright. Well done." Miss Wright blushed. Mrs. Earnshaw had never praised her before, certainly not in front of her colleagues. And she didn't know where the idea of having just children in the dance had come from. She looked up at the mural. The adults had all vanished. There were only children dancing round the maypole now.
Oh.
Hello and welcome to, oh sorry, Tea Time TV Time Machine. Back to the original name, weren't they, Sue? I don't care. I'm drowning in summer's cauldron this week, Bob. I'm tipsy on strawberries, cherries and an angel's kiss in spring. My summer wine is really made from all these things, Bob. Have we got an episode for you today? Are we going to finally bust this thing wide open? I think we are. With a few bumps on the way, but we are going to the stars. Best crack on then. Where do we begin? Let's start with the opening story extract we heard there. Sounds like it's all gearing up for a climactic scene at the Maypole. It does indeed. And let's talk about the bits of the story that we think are real. Yeah, absolutely. Now, you may remember, Bob and I grew up in a village called Stanton Moltravers, which is where the titles of the Mind Children TV series were filmed, and we watched the filming as kids. Now, I don't know about you, Bob, but I don't remember any dancing round a maypole. Me neither. But the mural described there and earlier in episode 4 is real. That's right. It wasn't in our school hall, but it was in the village hall. There really was a mural painted by a local artist depicting villagers and children dancing round a maypole. It also showed local landmarks, just like in the story. The pub, although the real pub is called the Merry Milkmaids, not the Seven Magpies. The church, which is St Mary's in real life, not St Botolph's in the Mind Children. And the clump of trees on the hill, called Compton Clumps in the Mind Children. But it's just like Stanton Roundhill near our village. I wonder if the mural's still there. Oh, it is. I went to visit. The hall was locked up and there was no one around, but I could see it through the windows. I'll post a photo on the socials. Any luck with that videotape? Well, I had a lead and I was hoping for a big reveal this week, but I'm sorry to report that, yes, the tape appears to have been wiped. No. Yes, thanks to our anonymous helper who snuck me into a well-known broadcasting organisation that still has some working pneumatic machines in their archive area. But our contact says it looks like the tape has been bulk erased. Damn. Onwards and upwards, after this word from our sponsor. Having trouble sleeping? Tossing and turning all night long with stress and worry? You need the Flange Air Mattress. The only mattress with pockets using agentic AI that dynamically adjusts your posture. Relaxing is a serious business. Get serious about sleep with Flange. Visit flangesleep.com for 10% off your first month subscription. Terms and conditions apply. Your mattress may go down as well as up. Should we dig into another story extract then? I think we should. Are you sitting comfortably? I am. Then I'll begin. Normally the three men would have met in the Seven Magpies, but these were not normal times. Instead, they met in a derelict boathouse on the river. "That boy Andrew is becoming troublesome," said Sir Arthur Lytton, the disgraced, self-appointed lord of the manor. "We'd have nothing to worry about if you hadn't confessed to setting up Jack Wigcombe," said Gareth Houston, the disgraced former headmaster of Cabot College. "You can talk," said Terence Penhaligon, the somewhat disgraced but still current owner of the plastics factory. "So says the toxic dumper," hissed Sir Arthur. "I used to go fly fishing round here." "And you can again, old chap, now we've been forced to clean up our act. Mendip Plastics is proud of its environmental credentials. I expect you've got more time for fishing now anyway." "I'm moving away. Marjorie's gone back to her mother, 99 years old and no sign of kicking the bucket. And the manor's up for sale so I can pay the insurance company back." "We are all sinners," said Gareth Houston. "Little does the village know, the worst of our sins are still secret, and they need to stay that way," said Sir Arthur. "What are you suggesting?" asked Terence. "An accident." "No, no, no, no. I'm just about rebuilding my reputation with the factory. I employ half the village. I'm not risking anything." "You've already risked everything by what you did to the boy," said Sir Arthur. "What we all did," hissed Gareth. "His parents, though, they know. They practically offered him up," said Terence. "They won't talk. We know what his mother does to him," said Sir Arthur. "Just the boy. We can arrange a trial of the ducking stool. A prank gone wrong. Perhaps some of the other children in the village will get the blame." The Mind children did not arrive in time to save little Andrew. It might seem strange, given their telepathic powers, that they did not know about the plot to drown him and blame someone else. But the Mind children did know about the plot. They decided to sacrifice Andrew to bring more chaos to the village. Andrew's body was discovered at 5 a.m. on the day before May Day, limp and still tied to the ducking stool in the village pond, thanks to a tip-off to the police. Constable Reese arrived at the scene just in time to see Stevie Jones running away. Stevie had been lured there by a note asking him to meet Andrew because he had something to give him. But he'd lost the note, and of course, nobody believed him. There was mayhem in the village. Andrew's parents hid away in a public show of grief. In reality, his mother, furious that she had not been the one to finally snatch the last spark of life from Andrew's eyes. His father was just relieved it was all over. He would divorce his wife and start again elsewhere. There was, of course, talk of cancelling the May Day celebrations completely. The parish council, Mrs. Earnshaw, the headmistress, and the school governors held a council of war in the function room of the Seven Magpies. Mrs. Earnshaw was almost triumphant. "I always said that ducking stool was an accident waiting to happen." "This wasn't an accident," said Terence Penhaligon coldly. "Let's all calm down," said the Reverend Mells, the vicar of St. Botolph's. "We can't go on with May Day," said Mrs. Earnshaw. "I must say, I'm inclined to agree," said the vicar. "Think of Andrew's poor parents." May Day was on the verge of being cancelled, when the Mind children, standing nearby in the burnt-out shell of Rose Cottage, began smiling and nodding their heads in unison. "On the other hand," said Mrs. Earnshaw, "the day brings a lot of visitors and business for the pub," said Terence Penhaligon. "Perhaps we can just omit the ducking stools," suggested the vicar. "Would save a lot of disappointment. The children are so keen on taking part in the maypole dance this year," said Mrs. Earnshaw.
"Blimey, Charlie, Dave. God blind me, Charles, indeed, Robert. That's unbelievably grim, even for adults, never mind a kids' TV show. Even for the late 70s, when, as we know, life was cheap and we risked constant death at the hands of strangers. Electricity pylons, slurry pits, railway lines, and quicksand. Yeah, not much quicksand round here, but I'm still terrified by the idea of it. Do you think the author, Damon Allen, was having a breakdown? Or knew what was coming to him? We know there's more than a grain of truth in the reasons why these three men were disgraced. There really was a factory pollution scandal not too far away. A local private school headmaster did resign, and he was in real life the boss of Damon Allen, who wrote The Mind Children. Exactly. There was some kind of local art theft. Maybe an innocent man went down for it. But there's way more. Andrew. There's something we've been ignoring all series, listeners. Something we find it too difficult to think about, let alone talk about. Terry. Yeah, our mate Terry. We think Andrew in The Mind Children may have been based on our friend Terry. Terry was always ill, you see. He missed a lot of school. His mum made a big fuss of him. She was always overprotective, we thought. But he'd never allow us back to his house for tea. He came to ours sometimes, but we never went to his. But now, we wonder if it was a case of Munchausen's by proxy. Yeah, yes, we do indeed. And we're wondering about his death. Terry drowned. Not in a village ducking stool. We didn't have one. He drowned in the river, which always seemed a bit odd. You could paddle across it most of the time. It was that shallow. Well, it can happen, but it's a big but. We've broken the code in Damon Allen's final letter. We have indeed, the one that starts L-U-D-Q-C-M-S. That translates as, "I was murdered." We can't quite bring ourselves to read out the rest of it. We really can't, but you'll find the coded letter in the show notes and on the socials. You'll have to play fair, as Mike says to Stevie. So it is a play fair cipher. And as the headmistress says, May Day is key. so the key is Mayday. Go online, find a Playfair cipher decoder, and you can read the whole letter. And you've been in touch again with Damien Allen's great niece, is that right? I have indeed. I've sent her what we found, and she's been doing a bit of digging. The three men named by Damien Allen as being guilty of all those crimes, the pollution, the boarding school abuse, the insurance scam, and the murder of our friend Terry, and very possibly Damien Allen himself, indeed. All three men are now dead. So they escaped justice? I guess so. But I think us finally uncovering what really happened is some kind of justice. I just hope you're having fun up there, Terry, playing at being Luke from the Mind Children, forever and ever. Amen. Shall we end with the last part of the story, Dave? I think so. Here's where the story ends. The village of Compton Magna collectively did an admirable job of putting the death of little Andrew Price to one side for the sake of the traditional May Day festivities. The ducking stool was covered with a tent, not because of any police investigation. It was an open and shut case. Stevie Jones had clearly killed him. But to make it easier to ignore another death in the community. The day started pretty much as normal. The Seven Magpies had set up a beer tent in the village green, serving scrumpy beer and Pimm's and lemonade for the ladies. The pub itself was also doing a roaring trade in pints in paper cups, from which people were seen wandering round the village drinking. The Mind Children were looking after the first aid tent, the usual St John ambulance crew having oddly taken sick that day. They surveyed the scene and nodded serenely. Everything was going to plan. A band of musicians appeared from no one knew where and began to play a traditional folk song. The members of the church choir found themselves strangely drawn to the band and began to sing. Other people who knew the words joined in. Then people who didn't know the words suddenly found they did know the words and they joined in too. The children began to dance around the maypole, but the adults barely took any notice of them. They were too wrapped up in each other. Stevie Jones' dad, miraculously pulled from the burning wreckage of Rose Cottage months earlier, had now recovered. His close shave with death only made him even more attractive. He was seen hand in hand with Mrs. Penhaligon walking off into the woods. Lady Lytton, back in the village for the day, looked on with what might have been taken for disgust, but was in fact jealousy, when her mind was taken off the subject by Joanne's father, back from a long sales trip in the north of England, who took her hand and began to dance with her. Joanne's mother didn't notice because she was too busy dancing with Jonathan Gray, the former computer salesman. All around the green, the adults paired up, but not with the people they were expected to pair up with. The music got louder and louder. The adults became more and more intoxicated. The Mind Children nodded in unison and smiled. Their eyes flashed blue and green before settling on a steady turquoise. The moment of communion had arrived. A shaft of green light beamed down from above the maypole. The children continued dancing, dozens of them entwined in colourful ribbons, oblivious to the fact that all around them the adults were falling down, dropping to the ground as if collectively fainting. The beam of green light pulsed and a deep humming sound filled the air, drowning out the folk music, which evaporated as the musicians too fell to the floor. The light disappeared as quickly as it had appeared. All the children were gone.
Now is the month of May, when merry lads are playing. Fa la 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 la, fa la 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 la. Each with his bonny lass upon the greeny grass. Fa la 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 la, fa la 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 la. The spring clad all in gladness doth laugh at winter's sadness. Fa la 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 la, fa la 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 la. And to the bagpipe sound, the nymphs tread out their ground. Fa la 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 la, fa la 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 la, fa la la la. Why then, why sit we musing, you sweet delight refusing? Fa la 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 la, fa la 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 la. Saint dainty dimsome speak, shall we pay blarly break? Fa la 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 la, fa la 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 la, fa la la la.
That was the final part of The Mind Children, written, read and mixed by Giles Booth, who also arranged the opening Listen With Mother theme tune and the synth version of The Merry Month of Maying. The solo version of Now Is the Month of Maying was performed by Georgina Harland. The choir version of Now Is the Month of Maying was performed by the Tudor Choristers Virtual Choir, directed by Dr. Kathleen Maguire, and recorded in May 2020 during the coronavirus lockdown. Visit the Tudor Choristers at www.tudorchoristers.org.au. All the other original music was written and performed by Lee Sperry. If you enjoyed the story, please tell your friends, add a review on Apple Podcasts, or drop me a line on Blue Sky as Blog My Wiki. Listen With Other is a GSB Radio Enterprises production.